I tried to explain to them, well, you're not taking into account, number one, inflation. You're not taking into account, increase in cost of goods. You're not taking into account just increase in cost of living. So all of those things I think are important factors that a lot of people kind of bypass. They don't take it into consideration as much as I think they should.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
David Sepulveda is a U.S. Air Force retired master sergeant with a strong track record in leadership and discipline. He is a real estate investor and also now a commercial broker. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine, David. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Ooh, 90 seconds. All right. Well, I honestly started back in 2013. That's where I started my real estate journey. I started out as an investor. It was really my focus to just try to grow my wealth, take care of my family, try to figure out how to get a piece of that American dream, if you will. So got into tax lien investing. From there, I graduated to tax deed investing. From tax deed investing, scaled up to the single family, did a really light flip. Then I scaled it up to a major flip. And then I said, well, the natural progression is to get into commercial real estate. What I noticed when I got into commercial real estate is that it's a little bit more difficult to kind of that entry to barrier, if you will. You have a lot of people that if you don't already have a proven track record, they don't want to play with you. They don't want to allow you to come into their sandbox. So what I had to do is I had to figure out, well, hey, if this is a space that I really want to be in, how do I break into that? And that's what led me to get my license as a commercial broker, because I still wanted to be an investor. But since nobody else wanted me to play, I was going to play either way.
That's awesome. So did you skip the residential brokerage side altogether?
I did. And that's not something that normally happens.
Right.
I will say that most brokers, and to be honest with you, when I got my license, they didn't even want to talk to me.
Right.
I actually had to go in person into the different brokerages and say, hey, here I am. This is who I am. Because commercial real estate is a completely different language than residential real estate. But once I went into the office and I started speaking the language, they were like, oh, like, he does know what he's talking about. We can allow him to play with us. So that's really what it took, was the persistence and that just resilience, that thing that we get taught in the military, being resilient.
Be resilient. Absolutely. One of the things it sounded like you did right was to understand who it was you were talking to when you went to these brokerages and say, hey, look, I've already done my homework. I know this industry. I mean, a lot of times, like you said, you got to have some sort of experience or something to kind of break in or get your foot in the door. What did you do once you got into the commercial real estate world to really solidify your position?
I really had to market myself as an expert. I had to make sure that I conveyed not only the confidence, but the knowledge, because you can have all the confidence in the world, but if you don't have the knowledge to back it, you're still going to look like a fool, So it was nice to come back home to Southwest Florida because I know the area. I grew up here. So it was very easy for me to already have a good working knowledge of the area. So then all I had to do was really express to all of the different business owners and the different landlords and whatnot that I do understand the market as well as the market product itself.
Got it. Very, very cool. So what year was it then that you got your or you became a commercial real estate broker?
Actually got my license back in 2021.
Okay. License in 2021, and you specialize, we talked about this off air, so I'll ask a little bit of a leading question, but you specialize in retail and multifamily. Things have changed incredibly in both of those asset classes from 2020, especially in the retail side, and multifamily, has gone hot and heavy, and then you know, we've seen quite a bit of slowdown on the transaction side on that. Is that something you're also seeing in your market, or are things still just running wide open where you are?
Southwest Florida is a very hot market. We're actually seeing growth in a lot of different sectors. So unfortunately, I don't get to capitalize on the downturn as everybody else may be able to in other areas of the continent. But Southwest Florida is just, the growth has been phenomenal. We're talking, last I checked, 1,000 people moving to Florida daily. And out of that 1,000, we were capturing here in Southwest Florida, I believe it was maybe, you know, 10 to 15% of that.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's really interesting. So you haven't seen the transaction volume slow down at all on the multifamily side?
No, we saw a little bit of a pause because of Hurricane Ian. So a lot of people were, you know, kind of holding on to their money, both on the buyer side and seller side. The buyers were trying to see what the sellers were going to do with the properties, if they were going to fix it up with the insurance money, if they were going to take the insurance money and run. So we saw a bit of a pause there. But man, Southwest Florida is so strong and so resilient, man. They just came back and, you know, a year later, and it's as if, you know, obviously we have areas where you can see the damage, but I mean, everybody's going strong.
Man, that's great. I think it's one of those things that you know, we hear it, but you don't. If you listen to the national conversation, it's going to say, man, you know, transaction volume in multifamily is down, what, 75% year over year on a national level, but real estate is indeed local. So I think that's the other part of it is, you know, for you guys, it's almost as if interest rates, it sounds like interest rates have risen, but you guys haven't taken notice.
No, not as bad as at other parts. I mean, there might have been a bit of a slowdown, but not enough for me to be like, hey, there's just an abundance of multifamily. Come shopping here, you know.
Come shopping and say, well, let's talk about then. What are people buying right now that makes sense for you guys?
Man, let me tell you, we can't keep multifamily on the shelf. We can't keep industrial on the shelf. Even retail now is starting to pick back up. You know, now that COVID has slowed down and we're getting the tourism back into Florida. So a lot of different sectors, especially like I said, here in Southwest Florida, we're seeing a good increase.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Let's talk about what you invest in personally. Now you've been, you talked about this early on, you know, in 2013, you were buying tax liens and tax deeds, which I think is kind of an advanced strategy, to be honest with you, for your kind of intro into real estate. Most people don't start with deals with that much hair on them. We won't go down that rabbit hole, but that's someday maybe we'll have you back on and we can talk about that journey, because I think that's a very interesting one. But what are you personally investing in now?
Now I am still investing in multifamily. I am investing in small retail as well as small businesses.
Interesting. Okay, how do you as a broker, tell me this from a, not from an ethical standpoint, but just from a working with your client standpoint, to know that you're putting their interests first? I'm sure that's something that you have to think about when you see deals come across your desk. You say, hey, man, that's a great opportunity, but I should, you know, you don't want to eat the best and leave the leftovers for your clients. So how does that work with you both as an investor and as a broker?
It's all about just open and honest communication, right? One of the things that we've learned in the military is integrity first. And I always try to make sure that I'm open and honest with my clients. I let them know, listen, I understand that you're trying to sell this property and I may have an interest in this property. Here's what I could offer you. And to be fair, I will also let you know that if we were to take this to market, you would get X amount. And there's quite a delta between my offer and X amount, but I can close quickly. You know, it'll be a smooth transaction as opposed to us being on the market and allowing the market to tell us when it'll close.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's really, really interesting. Yeah. But that would be, and that's, I mean, that's the beauty of doing what you do is that, you know, you can offer people deals that make sense for them in order to avoid a lot of those pains of taking deals there to market. Well, tell me this, David, as a master sergeant in the military, and I will openly say I know nothing about the military. I was not in the military. I'm often accused of it just because I was raised by a Marine. And so I know what it's like to grow up in one of those houses where it's, you know, be seated by X number of time and out the door by this. I'm very, very regimented. But what does a master sergeant do? And what are some of the things from a leadership and leadership development perspective, I think, that you learned inside of the military that still guide what you do today?
Well, so when you're looking at the military, it's really broken down into two different sectors. You have your enlisted sector and you have your officer sector. Being a master sergeant, which is equivalent to E7, is an enlisted sector rank. E7 master sergeant is one of the higher ranks. It is part of what they call the top three. The highest rank you can achieve as an enlisted member is an E9, which is a chief master sergeant in the Air Force. And then you have below that the senior master sergeant, and then you have the master sergeant. Now, depending on your, in the Air Force, we call it AFSCs. In the different branches, they call it by a different name. For example, in the Army, it's MOS. But basically what it is, it's your job in the military. So depending on your job in the military can really determine what your responsibilities and your roles are. You could be in charge of a whole section of airmen, and it could be include 20, 30 people, as well as a certain number of civilians. Or you could be in a very small shop and only be responsible for two or three people. A lot of my time as a master sergeant, I spent it in what they call the commander support staff. So the general has an admin staff, and that admin staff is responsible for making sure that the airmen are taken care of, whether we're talking about their vacation time, which we call leave, we're talking about any pay issues that they may have, making sure that they're, I don't know what you call them on the civilian side, but we call them enlisted performance reports. So they're EPRs. So that's really where I spent a lot of my time as a master sergeant, is making sure that the airmen were taken care of.
Wow. That's really, really awesome. What are some of the things, I guess, that you felt like were developed in you as a leader in that role?
Wow. There's really a lot of things that you learn being in the military, right? You learned teamwork, you learned the discipline, and the core values, which is the integrity first, excellence in everything we do, you know. And I think a lot of that has carried over in the civilian sector for me now, is making sure that, you know, like I stated before, I'm open and honest with my communication. I'm letting, you know, letting my clients know, like, listen, I can purchase this, but it's going to be significantly lower than if you were to take it to market. However, it's a lot quicker. So that integrity, just being that, you know, that honest dealings with people, and, you know, the discipline, because real estate is really a discipline game. You have to continuously do the cold calling. You have to continuously do the door knocking. You have to continuously look at the market trends, see what's going on, see what changes are coming into place, whether we're talking about, you know, new policies, new laws, you know, different, you know, companies coming in that may affect other sectors of your businesses. So it's just the discipline of doing the thing over and over again, no matter how much you might dread it.
And man, there is plenty of that to go around. I think for all of us, there's plenty of those things where you go, yep, I don't really want to do that today, but it's something you just got to put your head down and go. It's probably easier in the military when there's somebody, you know, yelling at you if you don't get it done, than it is when you just can, you know, hide it under your own to-do list. You're like, you know, maybe tomorrow we'll get that done. But either way, I like both things that you said there. Was the adaptability is the way I would summarize that, when you said, you know, being open to changes and looking at what changes are coming, and then the open and honest communication side of things. I think I was speaking with somebody yesterday, and they said, man, you know, I'm pretty non-confrontational. I'm like, man, like, one, stop saying that. I said, because that's negative self-talk. And two, we can rephrase this into something where that open and honest communication, like you're talking about, can become part of who that person is. And they're significantly younger than me, but I think it was just a great conversation, a reminder that we can constantly be improving the way that we communicate. Let's go back. I guess one of the things I thought about when you're saying looking at changes, and we're going to take a real left turn here in conversation, so I apologize, but I wrote it down here as a note. The Florida market, you're on the brink of, I think, what's the name of the next hurricane potentially heading your way right now? Have they named that yet?
Idalia.
Okay. So that's, and we're recording this at the end of August here in 2023. Hopefully that passes by without much to talk about, but the insurance markets for what you guys deal with in Florida, I mean, that's a hot topic. Like what are you advising from the brokerage side? Like how are you advising your clients and your own portfolio right now? What are you doing on the insurance side of stuff?
I mean, that has been a thorn in everyone's side because so many insurance companies have pulled out of Florida altogether, which, you know, by the law of supply and demand, the ones that have stayed are able to jack up their prices and have. I mean, you're talking about people used to pay, you know, let's just say $100,000 annually. Now they're looking at almost $500,000 annually, you know, so the increase is definitely hurting a lot of people's pockets. Unfortunately, it's a necessary evil, you know, because being here in Florida, you can't just go without flood insurance. You can't just go without, you know, any insurances to cover your assets. So unfortunately, you know, I try to make sure that I have surrounded myself with the best team so that my clients can win. So I do work with a good insurance broker who goes out there and finds my clients the best insurance coverage that they can.
What are people doing to offset some of those just astronomical rate increases?
Well, I mean, you're seeing a lot of adjustments, whether we're talking scaling back on their inventory in the retail sector, whether they're talking about increasing the rents in the multifamily sector. So you're seeing a lot of cost is being passed, you know, passed down, which it's understandable. But unfortunately, when you're in a market that you have a mix of fixed income and disposable income, those with the fixed income really feel the pain of those, you know, costs being passed down.
And there's really nothing you could do about it. I mean, it's just it is. I mean, that you can't continue to absorb those astronomical rate increases without then eventually, you know, passing that on down to the end user. And I don't see a way, any other way around that. I mean, especially again, as you said, you know, the insurers are leaving the market, leaving just a few there to choose from. And I guess that's just something probably to think through as you look at investing in Florida or markets like Florida that have some of these associated natural disaster risk, where it's like, okay, do you see people underwriting a continued increase in insurance costs where they say, okay, you know, it was 100, now we are at 500, but you know what, we're going to go ahead and budget for a million. I mean, is that part of people's equation now?
I think it's always smart to make sure that when you're underwriting any asset class that you always increase cost. I think, you know, whether we're talking about a increase of 3% or whether we're talking an increase based on prime rate or even the CPI, I think it's wise to. I don't see it a lot. I think I'm seeing it more now, right. You know, now that it has skyrocketed. But prior to Hurricane Ian, when I would talk to my clients and I would, you know, see where their mindset was and try to pick their brains as to how they're coming to the numbers that they're coming, I tried to explain to them, well, you're not taking into account, number one, inflation. You're not taking into account, you know, increase in cost of goods. You're not taking into account just increase in cost of living. You know, so all of those things, I think, are important factors that a lot of people kind of bypass. They don't take it into consideration as much as I think they should.
Interesting. Well, there's the nugget for the day. If this is something you haven't been considering in your underwriting, David just laid it out for you. Make sure you're including those things and really probably padding those stats, especially in higher risk markets such as Florida, on some of those variable costs that you have. I mean, that's the other bummer about it. It's like you have absolutely no control over it. It's like, yeah. Oh, by the way, your insurance went up 400 grand and you did nothing wrong. It's not like half of your property burned down, you rebuilt it, and they're like, oh, okay, well, you're a terrible manager. It's like, by the way, we're going to, you know, quintuple the cost of your insurance, and you're just kind of stuck. So that's, you know, preparing for some of those things can be a difficult thing to do and put in your underwriting, because it might kill more deals than you would like. But then again.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people, I think that's the deterrent for a lot of people. I think they're so caught up in the momentum of trying to get a deal that they don't look at the fact like, well, what are the factors that will make this a good deal? Right. Because in the long run, if you don't take those things into consideration, even a good deal today may not be a good deal tomorrow.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well said, David. Thank you for taking the time here to come on the show today. Certainly enjoyed learning about what a master sergeant is in the military, what your leadership skills there that you had in the military, and how you translate those over into what you've done. I love the go get 'em attitude in 2013, just jumping right into tax liens and tax deeds. I think that's really, really cool. And then, like you said, positioning yourself as an expert, jumping out there and saying, hey, look, I'm going to be a commercial real estate broker, becoming an expert there in your market and in your space. You've shared a lot of great things with us today. Certainly appreciate that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Honestly, you can find me on most social media under Commercial Real Estate Dave, or you can look up David Sepulveda with CRE Consultants in Fort Myers, and that'd be the best way to get a hold of me.
Fantastic. David, thank you again for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.